The union representing the corrections officers at the Fresno County Jail say they're planning a strike in less than 2 weeks. They say corrections officers aren't paid fairly, and it's impacting staffing.
Well, the attorney representing the union says one of the main reasons for this strike is the difference in pay between corrections officers and sheriff's deputies. They say if a negotiation and contract is not come up with by the end of the month, the union will go on strike. You could see picket signs in front of the jail.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
They should want to remedy the problem. They should be looking at long-term strategies.
And Fresno County says they are offering 11% base salary increases, increases to health insurance contributions, and a one-time pandemic first responder payment. In a statement sent out Tuesday, County Administrative Officer Paul Nerland says the strike is illegal, adding, the sheriff's office has a plan to effectively respond to this job action. In the event of a strike, jail facilities will continue to prioritize and ensure the safety of the public, staff, and inmates.
Well, that's key right there, and what they're talking about in the KC24 audio there is the chief administrator officer with the county of Fresno, Paul Nerland. Paul, welcome in. Good to meet you, man.
Thanks, Trevor. Great to be here with you.
And this is a controversy that's a swirling anytime there's a strike, and especially when it comes to lock them up in there. But before we jump into the deep end, Paul, how did you become the chief administrative officer for Fresno County?
Well, I've had the privilege of being in public service for many years, but I've had 24 years at the county, most of it in human resources roles, so I got to know the organization well. But I had the privilege to serve as the chief operating officer for a year with my predecessor, and I was appointed this last December, so new in the role, but been at the county for a long time, and it's really an exciting job, and I can't tell you how glad I am to be here.
Well, I would say in 24 years with HR, I'm sure that training changed over the decades, right?
The training changed, and they know that I know the organization inside now. But yeah, in HR, especially.
And you know everything about everybody, too.
The HR person.
I was always friendly with any HR person, man. You got to know, because they might even give you the heads up on something.
We know it all. We know it all. But great time, great career. It's been great to be in this role, so can't tell you what an honor it is to be in this role, really just serving the public.
And Paul, let me ask you, and I ask people who have stayed here who would have opportunity to take another job, maybe somewhere else out of the state, what's keeping you rooted here?
Really, it's making a difference. When I graduated college, I remember thinking I'd be in the private sector. That was, you know, my hope, and got in the public sector, began working for the county, and I'd say for those employees that work for the county, it's a calling. You know, it's something that knowing that you can see a difference in the community, you can actually see what we're doing. And that's what's so exciting about this job is I get to see the differences that we're making. I'm originally from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, moved here in the late 1980s. And over time.
I don't hear a little Canadian. Does it come out on occasion?
Every once in a while. There's a few things that comes out. I do make hockey references to my staff a few times.
Okay.
But, you know, over time, you moved here, didn't know there was mountains here, you know, coming here to find out.
Well, you can only see them a couple months out of the year.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But love hiking in this beautiful county, and so have come to raise a family here and just love living in this community.
Man, I so got into hockey for 1 year. It was 90, well, you were here in the late 80s, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
93, 94, the Sharks in San Jose. I lived there then, and that puck went up instead of down against the Red Wings, Detroit. I think they really almost upset them.
Absolutely.
The Sharks, that was that year I was into it.
Wayne Gretzky made a huge difference coming down here to California and just making hockey what it is today. But the NHL playoffs are on right now, so it's one of my favorite times of year.
I thought you were from Santa Monica.
Originally.
I know, I'm kidding.
Yeah, but no.
He wasn't always L.A., was he?
He wasn't always L.A., but I got to give him credit. He
really we got two roads we can go here, Paul. We can keep talking hockey, or we can talk a correction officer strike. I'll leave it up to you.
Now, let's get to the issue at hand.
All right, Gretzky. What's he doing? No, correctional officer strike. Now, have you heard? I mean, they're saying that it's not illegal. Why would it be? Or they're saying that it's not wrong to do. Why is it illegal to strike?
Yeah, the county's position strongly is it is illegal. And so we're actually filing a motion on that to the Public Employee Relations Board now. And so that will be going. And frankly, correctional officers, whenever they strike or go in a position like this, it's you're talking about inmates in a jail where we've got responsibility not just to public safety but to the inmate safety. And so for that reason, any situation like this could put them at risk. That is the reason that we're filing this motion. Just to put it in perspective, it's not the only time the county has dealt with labor strife, and coming from HR, I've seen it before. A decade ago, you know, this group was under a different union at the time, but when they were, the correctional officers decided wisely not to strike, and I think a lot of it was for this very reason. They wanted to make sure the health and safety of the inmates was the first priority. And so the county is filing with the Public Employee Relations Board. That will be heading to Sacramento as soon as tomorrow, and that is our position.
Now, when they talk about being an unsafe, understaffed working condition, that's one of the things I've heard from the other side here, is they're saying exhaustive working conditions, and I've heard them bring up Prop 47 and AB 109, saying it's increasing the danger of working in the jail because most of them at that point would be in prison, but that has changed. Is that what they mean by unsafe? Is that the...
Well, let me just say this. I want to just make sure I say this. First, our correctional officers have a difficult job. It's always been a dangerous job, and it still is today. So for the correctional officers who are working in our jail, they are hardworking employees, and I want to make sure the message for me to them is we appreciate what they do.
Excuse me for interrupting. I want to add to that is, you know, police officers and deputy sheriffs, the people they see every day when they're out on the street, there's a percentage that are bad guys. The majority are not bad guys, although they never know when that bad guy is going to pop up on them. But a correctional officer, when they get up, put their boots on, drive to work, they know that everybody around them all day long could easily have a violent streak, that they are bad guys. Hopefully they're rehabilitating, but they know they're around them all day long.
Absolutely. And during COVID-19, our correctional officers had to stand up and handle very difficult situations during that time. And so I want to begin with that. You know, I want to make sure they know we appreciate what they do. But when we talk about conditions in the jail, what they're really talking about is how many positions do we have? How many vacancies do we have? And so let me just put this in context. So the county of Fresno, over 2015 to 2018, we added almost 140 new correctional officers. So just, you know, you put that in perspective. So we have about 575 positions in the jail today. So that's an
correctional
idea.
Positions or all positions?
Correctional officers.
Okay.
Okay, that's a big deal. 140 brand new during that 3-year period. So that was a big deal to do that. And so doing that is, you know, was obviously had more bodies in the jail.
Give me the 3-year time frame again.
That was from 2015 to 2018. So we added, you know, 40 plus positions a year. To where
so
we
when
are
they're
today.
Saying now they're understaffed, you're saying, well, we did take care of that. No, you're not. Are you saying they're not now?
No, I'm not saying that. So here's what I would say. We have a higher vacancy rate than we'd like. We've got about 70 plus vacancies right now. However, to put that in context, we've got 19 people right now offered a job, accepted, who are going through medical clearance, who will be starting soon. Last week, we did a recruitment. We did a test. 277 applied who want to be correctional officers. And once they get through the process, we'll hopefully bring that vacancy count down even further. So I just want to emphasize, we're going to be addressing that problem. And the offer that the county has on the table right now will address those problems. I'm happy to go into that as well.
Well, okay. Do.
Okay.
What is the offer? Well, because it all comes down to money, right?
It does. So yeah. Just a couple things. It's a 3-year deal. Most of the economic items hit in the next 2 years. Okay. So put it in perspective. It's about 11% plus in salary. Just
over
11%.
Those 3 years? Or are you saying the first year it's an 11% raise?
That's over the 3 years.
Okay. What's the percentage for the first year?
First year is 5%.
Okay. And they want 31%. Is there 31% first year or spread over 3 years?
So what they want in the last offer is they want an additional 6% on top of that.
On top of 31?
Yeah. No, they want 6% on top of the county's last, best, and final offer.
So okay.
Yeah.
So that when I see 31% raise, that's spread over 3 years. When you add it up, is that where that number came from?
So
okay.
So I put it this way.
Let's keep it in yearly totals. That's easier for
you. Yeah, easier to follow. So as soon as we get this deal done, 5% is what the county has on the table. In addition to that, for correctional officers who've been around for 5 years or more, they get an additional 2.5% just on top of that, effective in July of this year. So that is about 45% of correctional officers that would, by this July, have a 7.5% base salary increase right off the bat. So that's very quick that they would see an impact from that. A year later, if they've been around for 10 years, and that affects about 40% of correctional officers, they would get an additional 5% on top.
Of the 7.5?
On top, yeah. So they're going to be getting that on top. So if you look at that, we've addressed retention. We're looking at addressing salary when we get employees in the door. I'm very encouraged by the recruitment that we just did, that we've got 277, but we're not satisfied with that with the county. We've got a very competitive offer on the table. In addition to that, we've offered a $1,500 COVID-19 pandemic pay. That's in recognition of what they did in the jail, putting their lives at risk during difficult times. But in addition to that one-time payment of $1,500, there's an additional $500 for those who served in a congregate setting, which is basically the correctional officers in the jail. So that's a one-time payment of $2,000 immediately. As soon as
I'm good on the mic if you need somebody to be like, lockdown in five. Yeah, I can talk on the mic. I work in a – well, that sounds like a pretty good deal. Now, what are they saying is wrong with that? There's not a lot of people that have worked somewhere for 10 years are going to get a 12.5% kick up right now with the, you know, the economy the way that it is. You're not seeing a whole lot of raises out there. But it seems to me, I read here, the Fresno County Public Safety Association, the salary boost they want, they say it's in line with inflation increases since 2010. So to do that, you would actually have to say, what, did they not get a raise in that time period? Yeah. So why would they go back that far to make a number?
So there's a lot of misinformation out there. And here's some of the misinformation. Was during the last economic downturn, a lot of our employees at the county had to take cuts, many of them a 9% salary cut. And the misinformation is a lot of what's being said is that they were never restored to their original salary. But actually, correctional officers had their salary restored around 2017, 2018. So their salaries were restored to where they were. They've had an additional 5% of pay since then. So I think there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstandings of what's happened in the past.
Well, my guests we're hearing right now, Paul Nerland, Chief Administrative Officer, Fresno County. We're going to come back and I'm going to ask him the question, if they do go on strike, who's going to be guarding the jail cell doors? We'll talk about it next.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
The working conditions are terrible in there. They've gotten more dangerous, and it's never going to be any better until the jail is adequately staffed, and it's never going to be adequately staffed until the county provides the pay and benefits that keep people wanting to work there.
That's the Fresno County Public Safety Commission, and that is their organization. And my guest here, Paul Nerland, Chief Administrative Officer of Fresno County. Paul, they're saying they're striking at the end of the month, correct?
They gave us notice that they would strike on May 23rd.
When they give you this notice?
That came up to us on May 8th.
Okay. Is that quick notice in the strike world? I don't know. I mean, did you kind of all know it was coming? Was it percolating?
It was percolating. So we knew that it may be coming. We hoped that that they wouldn't, but we knew that it was possible.
And how many, just ballpark me, inmates are in the Fresno County Jail at any given time?
So the population in our jail, it fluctuates 2,400 to 2,600 any given day.
That's a small town.
Yeah, there's a lot.
That's bigger than Rutherford, Tennessee.
There's a lot. There's
and a lot. They don't all have great attitudes. County jail, is it where they're sitting around the picnic tables and they all then have to, inside and then they all go back to the cells, or are they mostly locked in at all times? Are there different levels?
There's different levels, and it varies really depending on the classification of the inmate themselves. Right. So it really varies.
Well, ballpark me, how long can you stay in county jail? I mean, can it be years?
Most often in our jail, it's short-term stays that are in there. So I'd say it's typically short-term, but they're constantly...
They're getting longer because of the propositions. That is a fact.
They're
though,
getting
right?
longer, and we're getting more coming in and coming out. But it is getting longer, so the population is growing.
All right. So let's say here at the end of this month, you guys don't come to terms. Your percentages apart. I know the air traffic controllers, when I was a kid, I remember walked off the job and Reagan fired them. What would the county do?
So a couple of things I would say. So working, with the correctional officers representation is my understanding they have agreed to a minimum staffing level where they're going to keep some correctional officers on the job. Keep in mind when correctional
officers... So they're saying they're not going to leave you hanging out to dry.
There's some who will stay on, So what that number is something we'll...
But that could almost be unsafe if it's not enough of them, right?
That's still a key issue and coordinating with us as to when they're doing it. So the more they do that, the less of an issue there is. In addition to that, we've got staff across the sheriff's department that will be filling in those shifts. So we've got a number of things that include canceling vacations, longer shifts, including more people in those shifts to cover. But I just want to reassure the public, the sheriff's department has a solid plan in place to cover shifts during the strike. It's not easy. It certainly puts an impact on operations to do that. Other things will suffer because of that, but the jail will be safe. We will have staff on hand to cover that, but there's going to be a cost.
Would there be, I know like when there's a big fire somewhere, other counties come to help. Would you put the call out to surrounding counties, hey, on your days off, you can make X amount of money by coming and filling in during a strike? Do they?
Not typically for that. If we have a fire.
So we can cover it.
Yeah, we don't do mutual aid for those kind of things, but typically we've got internal staff who can do that. Again, not easy, but if the union...
Now, when you're saying internal staff, you mean law enforcement staff on the sheriff's department side?
Yeah. So
deputies?
Deputies, that could be correctional sergeants, correctional lieutenants, and so...
You're not talking about Secretary Sally putting it on?
No. Okay. No. Those who are trained will be there, and everybody, all hands on deck. And again, and keep in mind...
Well, let's hope it doesn't happen.
We hope it doesn't happen. And keep in mind, correctional officers don't have to strike, so... They are under no obligation. So even though the union says we're going to strike, if they choose not to, so for example, if it's an illegal strike, if the Public Employee Relations Board agrees with our position, correctional officers don't have to strike. They're not paid when they strike. They can't use their vacation or sick when they strike. So they're taking a financial hit themselves when they do that. So
would they be the ones that you said? I said they're not going to leave you hanging out to dry. You said I hope not. Would they be considered, as they say in the strike world, scabs?
I'm not going to speak. That's going to be up to their leadership as to what they would do.
But I'm saying that is that with the blessing of the leadership. Hey, we're going to go on strike, but we're not going to totally leave you hanging. We're going to give you these few guys.
Yes. Yeah. So there's going to be some that they're going to agree. We're going to make sure we have minimum staffing.
That's
at this level.
The union saying that. Yep. It's not. Okay. So they wouldn't be scabs,
right?
Or picket line.
In addition to that, there may be some that decide, hey, I'm not going to do this. I don't want to be part of this. And it is actually their right to do that.
I never liked the word scab. That means, that guy's little girl could be sick. She needs the insurance and, they need to eat. And, scab's a pretty easy word to throw around, isn't it? But it's not always applying to people that make that decision.
It is. And these correctional officers know better than anybody what's happening in the jail. So they know the impact. So there may be those who don't. That's going to be their decision, but it's their right to make that decision.
Paul, what's a ballpark yearly salary for a correctional just starting?
Yeah. So coming in the door with the offer we have on the table, it's around $44,000 annually base, but it tops out about $53,000 at the entry level. But as they move up the chain, it goes up to about $77,800, and that's before overtime. That's before any other pay.
And if you start out as a deputy sheriff or a Fresno Clovis police officer, are they a few tens of thousands higher than that?
It is. I don't have that number at the top of my head. But, yeah, the correctional officers do make a different amount.
Yeah.
But we're not comparing with deputy sheriffs.
Does it require less training?
It's different. It definitely requires less training.
Is there an academy you go to?
No. So for a deputy, they are going to an academy. There's post-training that a deputy would go to. For correctional officers, certainly there's training that they go to, but we're comparing correctional officers to correctional officers in other counties. So to put this in perspective, we have four levels of correctional officer. with the offer we have on the table, our top level 3 and 4 are top in the valley after this deal is done. So it's competitive, it's fair, it's equitable, and the vacancies that we have now, our goal, our hope, is they're down to minimal vacancies at the end.
All right. If somebody heard all this and said, you know what, I could do that kind of line of work. You said there's openings right now. You got people you're weeding through. Some will rise to the top. Some will get bumped. Is there any kind of education degree? Is there a high school diploma that you have to have? Or no, it's
no. There's no education required coming in. And that
you can't be on drugs. That's probably I would say one of the.
There is a background. There is a medical clearance and. You go through the process, so clearly you've got to go through that background. And the Sheriff's Department does provide training. But it's for those who do it, very rewarding job, very difficult job. I just want to emphasize
how much. I had a buddy that was a guard at Corcoran, a little harder core prison right there. But the stories that he would tell me, man.
It
make
is.
Your hair stand up.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I mean,
but he loved what he did.
Yeah, and they're really serving our community in a way that sometimes is unsung. So we appreciate what they're doing, but we've got a competitive offer on the table, and we want to really bring this to resolution quickly. We still hope that we can do that. That's really the county's goal. We'd love to get this done. We'd love to get agreement, get these salaries in these employees' hands, because that's really being held up until this is all done.
And he was honest, too, because I'd always say, Eli, get a Charles Manson letter. I'll sell it to the National Enquirer. I'll split it with you. He's like, nope, can't do that. So he had morals and scruples there as well. Paul, listen, good to meet you, man. Chief Administrative Officer with Fresno County, Paul Nerland. And I guess I'll be hearing your name over the next few weeks as this gets settled, man. But thank you for sharing, and I understand it a whole lot more now.
Great. Thank you. Good to be here. Thank you.
You betcha. Thank you, man. What? 104 mail-in ballots were found on a sidewalk in Hollywood. Remember when I made the joke that with ballot harvesting, you could be like rolling through Del Taco with 300 in the back of your Honda? Well, I wasn't too far off. I'll give you the details next.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. Listening to the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Thanks to Fresno County's Chief Administrative Officer Paul Nerland for coming in. Know a whole lot more about what this strike is going to be all about. We'll have to keep our eyes on this one. Hopefully they can get it all settled out. YourCentralValley.com said the Clovis City Council hosted a workshop to talk about their shortage in the police force. And they said the council made no decision. They did agree on adding more officers to the force. Well, good. Here's the reporting, and yeah, I'm going to call Jennifer Ortega here on YourCentralValley.com. Yes, we want more officers. I don't want to use the reserve. I don't know if I support a tax measure right today, said one of the city council members. Which one? Which one believes that way? Come on. That's lazy, right? Who the city council member is. They're trying to talk about, well, if you need more police officers, you got to get a tax measure on the November ballot. Taxes, that's what we need. We need taxes, don't we? Everybody's just like, hey, I got too much extra money. Can you take some more out of my paycheck, please? Here, just another slice, another razor blade slice. Go ahead. Oh, yeah, my whole arm's cut up. Just keep slicing. Yeah, pretty soon it'll fall off. I won't need it. The concern, they said, taxes, general tax, special tax, pick it out, occupancy tax, pick your tax, measure P tax, and we'll go kick a church out with that tax money. All right. Well, we don't even know right now if it's going to rain again until, I don't know, Thanksgiving, November, or fall. We have no idea where right now our two largest reservoirs are at critically low levels. And we're at a point when they actually should be at their highest, you know, with the snow melt trickling down. Shasta, less than half of where it should be in early May. It's the driest it's been at this time of year since record-keeping first began. And when do you think we began record-keeping? You know, all our climate change, you know, all the stats and over time, look how the climate change. How long do you think we've been keeping records of Shasta Lake level? Only since 1976. You would really? We weren't keeping records in 75, 74, 73, 78. No, we weren't. Lake Oroville's at 55% capacity. Critically low, worst drought in the history of the state water project. The two largest reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, they're so severe that water cuts are actually coming in 2023. Not just for us. There's other states that siphon off of Mead and Powell. Arizona, Nevada, and New Mexico. We'll see this. And as that water level drops, what are we gonna see? You're gonna say the bottom of the lake? Correct, but dead bodies too. Where do you want me to put it, Mac? I just throw it in the lake. Right? That's where they always get rid of stuff, in the lake. Less than a week after they found a body in a barrel in Lake Mead, they found another one. It's a tough economy out there. If you got some scuba diving gear just sitting around, you're not making any money. Two retired L.A. Las Vegas police officers are offering a reward for divers who find additional bodies in Lake Mead. They said they're offering $5,000 for any additional remains. Now, why two retired Las Vegas police officers would be like, hey, I'll pay you $5,000 if you swim down there and find me a dead body. I don't know. They didn't go into any further story on this. YourSenseOfValley.com says responded to a call. National Park Rangers did Saturday that human skeletal remains were discovered in Lake Mead again in the National Rec area. A medical examiner has been contacted to determine the cause of death. They said no signs of foul play. If it's not a sign of foul play, somebody A was swimming, had a heart attack, and drowned or committed suicide. Most of the time, you're not swimming alone, and most of the time, you don't hear commit suicide by walking into a lake and drowning. So I would think maybe foul play was going on, right? See, this is why now these stories, I've never, and it wasn't that long ago either that I got creeped out by it. I don't swim in lakes anymore. I don't like the sensation, the feeling of not knowing what's underneath me. And I used to be a pond jumping, lake swimming, coming up, gurgling water and spitting it on my brother, right? You know, come on, it didn't bother me at all. But the sensation of dark water and your legs are swimming around and you don't know what it could be, 3 inches or 3 feet right below you. And even if it's a fish or something, okay. But, you know, if it just hits your leg, I know fish, humans scare fish away. So if you do feel something, it's probably not a fish. I think of those Russell George, my best friend in Memphis. His grandmother lived just south of Memphis. And if you go south of Memphis, what do you run into? Mississippi. We were down in Mississippi running off this wooden pier. And they had the, what were those called? Cattails that would grow. And it was marshy, kind of swampy pond. And the water moccasins. And we would run and do, I mean, we were Mountain Dew commercials before they were ever Mountain Dew. And you couldn't get me back in that water again. Never. No way. And now think about it. If you've been swimming in the lake, there's dead. Now, I never thought when I started to get kind of lake creeped out, I never thought, well, of course, there's dead bodies beneath here that they throw in here, right? But there are and there were because it's now being proven. So if you've been at Lake Mead and you came up and were gargling water and spitting it on your brother, that was dead body water. No. I'm starting to sound Howard Hughes, and maybe I am. I don't even care if it was a classy high-scale hotel. Public pools now. Like apartment complex, public pools. It's not like I've been asked to jump in one lately, but if somebody did, hey, I got an extra pair of trunks. Come on, let's go. Cannonball. I'd be like, okay, no, I'll sit here on the side. Enjoy yourself. Tell you the truth, I changed my, I bought a $517 hot tub off Amazon thinking it wouldn't work and I'd send it back. It's a blow up kind. Works perfectly. Beautiful. 104 degrees. And my brother was visiting me and he was in it and he got out the day that he left the next day. I changed the water because I didn't trust him. I knew he'd be like, I didn't feel like getting out of the hot tub. So I just, yeah. So, yeah, that's even family. I changed the water. So, I get that's Howard Hughes then. That story right there just proved I need some counseling. Former state attorney general, now part of this project investigating election fraud across the United States, is warning voting by mail undermines democracy. Well, let's just go back to former President Jimmy Carter, former Secretary of State James Baker. Back in 2005, they did a report. They offered it, and they came out talking about vote by mail undermines democracy. The Carter-Baker report, 20 years ago almost, said absentee ballots remain the largest source of potential voter fraud. Now, 2020, we know that was the safest election in United States history. We know that. Election officials actually ignored state law. We know that. But we know all the blank ballots that were mailed to the wrong addresses, to a big old apartment building. Somebody could get it, right? Well, that wasn't from 2020. That was a warning from the 2005 commission. The Carter-Baker report, they said citizens who vote at home, at nursing homes, at the workplace, or in church are more susceptible to pressure, overt and subtle, or to intimidation. Carter Baker said vote buying schemes are far more difficult to detect when citizens vote by mail. It recommended states ban third-party organizations, activist parties, and candidates from handling absentee ballots. It just makes sense that if you have ballots that are moving around from A to B to C to D to E, F, G, that you're going to have some problems. Carter Baker wanted to make sure absentee ballots are kept secure until they're opened and counted. That's how one has a fair and free election in a world where people are corrupt. Only takes a couple corrupt, right? A couple bad apples, correct? Many states had all these drop boxes, and I haven't yet to watch 2,000 Mules, but I am. It said it ignored the chain of custody standard for ballots, and I know when I watch it, I'm going to be taking notes and sign on the day after and be like, I can't believe what happened down in Georgia. The 2020 election, though, so these, and looking into what Dinesh has done in this and what he said in his interview here, the vote processing centers, they're not supposed to be post offices. And that's what happened. The postal facilities turned into voting centers. Little oversight of the United States Postal Service. So it's no wonder people have concerns about the 2020 election. All you got to do is go back and listen to Democrat Jimmy Carter and Republican James Baker. They talked about it. Here's what they said. Paper ballots cast in person, counted by hand, are the gold standard. Did you hear that again? Paper ballots cast in person, counted by hand, are the gold standard. They're accountable, they're transparent, they're inclusive. That's the three conditions that the U.S. Agency for International Development applies when the United States goes around to foreign elections. We're not going to give aid to a country that has a corrupt election. Unless we send out stimulus checks to Americans, then we're doing that. But we actually evaluate the fairness of foreign elections before we give a dime of our taxpayer money. And we look for accountability, transparency, and inclusiveness. And paper ballots, cast in person, counted by hand, that's what we hope other countries to do. No. Do we go to other countries and go, hey, you need to have a fair election? Here's a guy named Zuckerberg. He wants to hand out $420 million in cash to local officials. That'll help it, right? I told you about the 300 ballots in the back of the Honda at Del Taco, a drive-thru. That wasn't a real story. I made that up as to, that's why the ballot harvesting is not illegal in California. A woman discovered a box of mail-in ballots where? East Hollywood sidewalk. Out walking her dog. She found 104 unopened ballots. She took the ballots home, tried to figure out who to contact. She said she called several politicians and the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. What did the L.A. County Sheriff's Department and the politicians tell her? That's not my problem. Contact the post office. Eventually, she said, the L.A. County Registrar's Office contacted her about getting the ballots. They personally drove to pick up the ballots. They said they believed this was an incident of mail theft and not a directed attempt at disrupting an election. Well, it doesn't matter. Whichever it was, it disrupted an election. That's 100 people, 104 people right there that were denied their right. And they were denied their right by the system that has been put into place. And it used to be in California that when someone said, Humboldt County, what'd you think? Humboldt County? Pot, right, weed. Now Humboldt County is threatening to sue San Francisco over what? Drugs, open drug markets like they're doing in San Francisco. Humboldt County suing over drugs because it's killing their county next.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Friday, I'll be doing the show live from the big Fresno Garlic Festival at the Fresno Fairgrounds. I need to go to the store. I'll probably go, it'd have to be tomorrow night or Friday before the show. I got to get some basil, fresh basil. I got pasta at home. I got everything else. And there you go. You make the tomato and basil. All you need is that garlic and the basil. That's it. Put it in there. Throw your tomatoes in. So I'll have fresh garlic. I bet it'd be like when you go to Costco and they're giving out free samples everywhere, right? It'd probably be that kind of. But you don't want to chomp on garlic. Buck used to put it on his cereal. Elderly friend who passed away during COVID, but he used to put it on his cereal, garlic. See, it helped him live into his 90s, and he was as sharp as a tack, man. I do say one good thing, he doesn't have to see what America's turning into. Whew, I tell you, Humboldt County Supervisor Rex Bond. Rex said he's fed up with the fentanyl overdoses in his county. He said, I got frustrated, it's not stopping. He got all his other superintendents to consider sending a sternly worded letter to the DA of San Francisco threatening legal action against the city he believes to be the county's major supplier of the dangerous opioid. The draft of the letter says the open air dealing of drugs in the Tenderloin area is causing an environment in which these drugs can be easily located, transported, sold, and distributed in the area with no repercussions. He said the county of Humboldt refuses to sit idle while this drug pours into our country from the Tenderloin. If we cannot reach a mutually acceptable solution shortly, we will have no option but to seek a legal remedy. What they did, the Humboldt County Drug Task Force, has surveyed numerous suspected drug dealers. And they followed them to the Tenderloin District, watched them purchase fentanyl from dealers right there in the Tenderloin, followed them back to Humboldt County, woo, stopped them, got the fentanyl. Four people arrested April 25th after they had purchased fentanyl from Tenderloin, then drove up to Humboldt County. They had two arrests for fentanyl possessions in 2020. In the year 2021, they had 84 arrests. How many do they have so far? Now, 5 months into the year? They have 76 now. And they said, well, we're going to follow these drug dealers back, see where their source is. The open-air drug market. Do we have a Fresno County Drug Task Force? Maybe we could do the same. See, is that where they're coming from? They're getting the fentanyl in the open-air drug market? You can put enough fentanyl in your pocket. Well, you probably wouldn't put it in your pocket. You can put enough in a lunchbox. I mean, and it wouldn't even fill barely a corner of it up enough to kill all of Fresno County. The draft letter urges San Francisco to exercise their authority by prosecuting all cases that are brought to your office and make sure the dealers around the state understand they are not welcome into your county any longer. They don't care. They don't care at all. They don't care that 100,000 Americans died of drug overdoses during the first year of the man-made lockdown. You know they don't. That doubles the figure from 2015. If you just go back to 1999, how many Americans in 23 years, how many Americans have died of drug overdoses? A million. 1 million, no longer with us. Two-thirds of the deaths are now from the synthetic opioids, primarily fentanyl. The prescription drug crisis, you know, with all the opioids and all that now, that's nothing. You know that? What we went through with all the pills and the factories and the doctors, that's nothing. This fentanyl, I'm telling you, man, it is 50 times more potent than heroin, and now they're talking about carfentanil, even more potent than that. Fentanyls replace heroin. Heroin replaced morphine. Woo! 10 kilos of heroin are stopped at the border. They got to go back. Hey, we'll talk more about abortion next.